In this episode of the Smart City Podcast, I interviewed serial entrepreneur and founder of Wooshka.me, Zubin Pratap. Zubin tells us more about Wooshka and solving urban congestion and shares his true passion of bringing people back to the heart of a smart city. We also discuss the importance of standardizing data to create boundaryless experiences and breaking down silos by asking why. We have a great discussion about how everyone has a place in the smart city space and encourage people to get involved no matter their background. As always, I hope you enjoyed listening to this episode as much as I enjoyed making it.
It's the Smart City Podcast, whoa, with smart city experts, here we go. Connecting smart technology, both big and small. Smart cities are making life better for all. Big data, emerging trends, self-driving cars and more. The Smart City Podcast is what you're looking for.
Hello, Zubin. How are you?
Hi, Zoe. I'm good. How are you?
I'm very well. It's a beautiful afternoon here in Toowoomba. I hope the weather's just as nice down where you are.
You know what? Just for this podcast, we actually have a bit of sun here in Melbourne. It's not very often, so maybe it's just for the duration of this podcast, but it's great weather here. A little cold, but beautiful and sunny.
Yeah, no, it's exactly the same here. It's actually quite cold, but it's beautiful and sunny. So, well, let's jump straight into this, and can you tell us a little bit about your background and what you are passionate about?
Yeah, sure. So my name is Zubin, and I've had a bit of a journeyman background in that sense. I've done a lot of things. I started off as a litigator, moved into corporate law, spent 10 years in that, especially in telco and tech and international M&A. And then from there, I moved into channel work, channel management and strategy. From there, I moved into new technology business development. Again, at Telstra here, which is a big telco. And then all along, I was sort of quite interested in the technology space and was teaching myself things along the way. And then I left my formal corporate career last year to start Wooshka, which is really a big experiment in sort of human-centered, design-driven application and technology development.
Yeah, awesome. Well, I'm really looking forward to hearing more about that. But let's talk a little bit first about what kind of sparked your interest in the smart city space.
Yeah, sure. Absolutely. It wasn't any one particular thing, Zoe, but I think the reason why I'm interested broadly in the space is I think the way we experience cities is going to change a lot and should change a lot. As always, with new technology, there's a bit of an adoption curve. And as people are now increasingly living mobile lives, there's a huge crying opportunity for us to change the way we design cities, think about cities, and understand how people interact with cities, because you're no longer interacting with cities in an analog world. There's an increasing digital overlay on any experience in a city. And so I've been quite fascinated with problems that are conventionally so unsexy and difficult to solve that nobody bothers to, either the payback periods are too long or you can't make money from it, or it's just, you know, a hairy, ugly problem. And I'm quite fascinated by that because I think the average person continues to experience those problems in a world that's otherwise been digitally transformed.
Yeah, cool. So what is a smart city to you?
I mean, depending on the day you ask me, I'll come up with sort of different ideas. But I think at the core of it, I think the smart city nomenclature sort of expression tends to lose one important point, which is it's really about the human at the heart of it. And I think smart cities tend to convey a very technological, digital, sort of high-tech impression when really it should be cities for people, you know, cities for human beings, cities for everyone. And so to my mind, a smart city is one that truly has managed to use technology to put humans back at the front, center, and heart of what it is, the city. I mean, if you look at the history of human development, cities formed around human beings and their habits, right? And then we went through a shift where, those communities sort of dispersed a bit and then started moving back in urban migration. And when people started moving to where the cities were rather than cities forming where the humans were. And I think going forward, we're going to need a system where the city is pressed back in service of human communities, which arguably we've lost a little bit of that over the years.
Interesting. And
So why do you think that the smart city concept is so important?
I think it's just a moment in time. I think it's an opportunity. It's quite pivotal at this moment in time. We're probably the most fortunate generation to be born at a time when, you know, at least people of my vintage can remember the analog world, understand from our direct experience and memories of it what unsolved problems continue today. You know, we therefore are in a position to not take these things for granted and realize that technology can play truly transformative sort of roles in the way we change cities. So that's really at the heart of why I think that's important and why the timing's right.
Yeah, definitely. So let's talk about some of the projects and things that you're currently working on.
Sure. So I created, I set out with Wooshka.me to prove a very simple hypothesis, which is that it should be technologically possible today with the sophistication of the devices around the world and the sophistication of mobile networks for us to automatically understand when a person has driven away from a street parking spot, right? And the reason that hypothesis is so critical is because to me, urban congestion, which is, you know, largely attributable to traffic, you know, between 30 and 70 plus percent of traffic in congested areas is just people going round and round looking for parking. And I looked at that problem and I said, that's not a problem really of technology. That's an information problem. So, you know, Zoe, when you drive away from a spot and if I'm looking for parking in that area, the fact that you've just vacated a spot is really valuable information. So how do I get that information to me? And now we have, you know, with 4G and 5G and the sophistication of the devices we carry around, I wanted to prove that our phones could do that for us, and which is what we did. You know, after 6-7 months of development and just intensely focusing on that one problem, we created an app where it's literally one screen, and it will detect when another user leaves a spot with a very high degree of accuracy, over 90% on average. And while that has inherent problems in that, it requires other people to have the app, I wanted to prove that that technology is now feasible. Now, the next stage is how do we take it from there into cities so that we can actually ensure the distribution to solve the problem of traffic congestion. So that's where we're at the moment. And in the course of that, and, you know, working with governments and councils and, you know, a lot of my own sort of study of the problem as an outsider, not having direct background in the parking industry has actually been a huge advantage, because I have no holy cows to defend. I have no embedded assumptions. I can start right from scratch and say, well, this is a clean slate. How do I build this? And I realized that the challenge is also that, you know, councils and governments struggle to know how to express their data or how to make sure it's all standardized. So we at Wooshka wrote a few standard specifications just about 2 months ago on how you could communicate parking restriction data, for example. An experiment is saying, well, you know, street sign in Toowoomba is still trying to communicate the same, you know, 6 or 7 principles in terms of the information. And so it's not different from a street sign in San Francisco or one in Melbourne in terms of the parking restriction data, you know, how long you can park, which days of the week, et cetera. And there's no standard that is widely used or accepted. And so we just try to simplify that by creating one.
Yeah, cool. Let's dive a little bit deeper. I'm really interested in how or what your kind of strategic kind of plan is for Wooshka, and also that kind of standards writing. Do you plan to kind of collaborate with, I don't know, a local government or something like that, or other apps that are out there, that kind of thing?
Oh, look, I think government typically gets ignored by a lot of the startup community because they are slow to respond. Their drivers and commercial and policy drivers are extremely different from what private sector businesses would typically, you know, look at. And I'm very keen that governments don't get left behind in the opportunities here. So my top priority is to try and work with local councils to create little experimental systems with them where we can show them that by standardizing their data in a certain way and injecting it into, let's say, the Wooshka platform, the Wooshka platform then becomes the basis or the toolkit with which cities can digitally communicate their information to people in real time and vice versa. Like, it needs to be a bi-directional communication. So, for example, Zoe, if you're driving to, you know, a particular street that's highly congested, you know, getting an idea of how many people are there at what time, what they're doing, how they're using the city spaces, what's important to them, where they spend their time, is as important for the council as it is for, you know, you, Zoe, to know, well, where can I park? Where do I get this facility? Where can I pay this bill? You know, how do I make it as seamless and frictionless as possible for people to interact with cities. Historically, each city has had its own little private kingdom and domain. But now people expect a boundaryless experience. Like, I shouldn't have to have a different experience just because I fly up to Toowoomba, and you shouldn't have a different experience because you've come down to Melbourne. You know what I mean? We should just be able to move around between cities and experience them the same way with the same reliability and the same expectations.
Yeah, and the only thing that kind of changes is the character of the city and the exciting, you know, the different things that are happening. That's what, you know, you're going to visit. But it's just as accessible, just as livable, and just as sustainable as the smart city that you came from.
100%. You know, it's just the content of the information that may be absolutely, you know, or presented in the same way, but the inherent spirit or structure of a city or a council or a precinct, in fact, should be protected. But how you express the data to people should be standardized so that everyone can get the benefit of it.
Mm. Yeah, definitely. And I really like talking about signs. That sounds really boring. But I also think that signage at the moment is so there's too much of it, for starters. And second of all, it's so not standardized. I mean, it's supposed to be standardized, but there's so many signs out there that can mean the exact same thing but have too many words, or, you know, are in the wrong spot, or that kind of thing. And I've discovered that as much as I love signage, other people, when they're driving along, do not read signs because there's too many of them. And what's the point of that? So I'm really interested in hearing your thoughts about signage in the physical layer, which is what it is now, and also signage in the kind of digital layer.
Yeah, 100%. And you hit the nail on the head in that, you know, how do people use signs? And this is, again, classic human-centered design, right? Signs as a tool to communicate information evolved, you know, hundreds of years ago, really. And in a parking or a street signage world, evolved, you know, ever since the automobile became mainstream. And so we've continued to use that approach to planning our streets. Now, having worked with a few councils here in the City of Melbourne, I have the greatest respect for the fact that our roads even work. I mean, it is a testament to their hard work, commitment, and resilience that we were able to do anything, because they're typically under-resourced. It's an enormously complex problem, and it's made more complex by the fact that it's largely done manually and in an analog way. You know, so at the end of the day, a sign is meant to communicate information, and human behavior may or may not change depending on how that information is communicated. But the more efficiently that information is communicated, the more timely it is, the easier it is for those who wish to comply to comply. Ultimately, if you intend to comply, as, you know, conscientious people do, and most people are that way, the idea is to take away the friction, to give them, you know, rather than 6 bits of data that they have to sit and do mental math with while they're cruising on a street, you know, we now know what time you are, what time it is wherever you are, and we can just deliver the information relevant to that moment in time to you. You know, and that's how I believe the future of signage will be. It belongs in your device, in your car, in real time, and dynamic.
Yeah, definitely. Cool. So let's, pan out a little bit to Australia. And how do you think that Australia is kind of embracing the smart city concept?
I think that Australia has always had an incredible inventiveness to it. Look, I'm an immigrant. I moved to Australia and became Australian, you know, over 10 years ago. And having the perspective of both an outsider and someone who sort of matured within the country, there's no doubt that Australians are an extraordinarily inventive people. And that's something, you know, I count myself as an Australian now, and I think that's something we should be very, very proud of. We have, for a small country so far away, we have punched well above our weight. It's almost absurd how much above our weight we've punched in terms of our contribution to technology, sport, culture, media, whatever it is. There isn't a domain of human expertise that we haven't got a few absolute grandmasters in, right? Which is an extraordinary achievement for a small country that's young and given our history. Having said that, I do believe that the pace of change is so fast, and the difficulty around the way traditional systems of, you know, policy making, etc., and this is not specific to Australia, it's a global problem. The ability to respond to the pace of change outside in the environment makes it harder for decision makers to actually make decisions. And whether it's conventional procurement systems where, you know, you procure bespoke contracts for 5 years, which, you know, 3 years down the line, you realize are rubbish and don't work and you need to change and it's too expensive. You know, these are habits of the old way, analog way of doing things. I think Australian authorities are aware of the problem. I'm not entirely sure whether they're incentivized to actually act on it with any urgency, because there are, you know, sort of practical realities of their budgets and, you know, the political environment and so on to think about. But we are certainly far ahead of a lot of people and most countries in terms of our conversation. I think there are a few countries in Europe that may be a little bit ahead of us. So our heart's in the right place. Our intentions are right. We just need to follow it up with action and a little bit of courage to once in a while be the first ones to do something. You know, the city of Melbourne is a great example with their open data platform, how extraordinarily world-class that really is, you know, to break away from the pack in some sense and do that. And I think every council has the ability to do that, because the risk of action is what everyone concentrates on. But honestly, Zoe, the risk of action is almost always lower than the risk of inaction.
Yeah, true. No, I really like that. And I think, yeah, you hit the nail on the head there, that kind of everything is changing so quickly, but the smart city concept is a long-term solution. So it's not about just throwing tech at something. It's actually about moving with the times in a way where you don't get caught with, you know, old technology or that kind of thing. So it's really that strategy, but then implementing that in a well thought out process. And that will be like iterations. It will be some failures. It will be more of an agile kind of approach.
100%. And we've got to stop thinking of failure as a serious consequence. Rather, it's just a data point.
Yeah. 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 No, definitely. Cool. Well, leading on from that, let's talk a little bit about integration. So how do you think that we can better integrate across the different disciplines, so government, industries, academia, and even just across the different silos that exist within our society?
Look, I don't think there's one answer to this. My personal answer will reflect my own personal bias, obviously. So with that caveat in mind, I think most disciplines have gotten so technical, so advanced and so sophisticated that we often, and I'm guilty of this quite often myself, we often forget why we bothered to become this good in a given domain, right? So whether it's, you know, the sciences, you know, whether it's medicine, whether it's engineering, whatever it is, we've gotten to a space of sophistication where we need to step back and say, well, why is any of this important? Why is artificial intelligence important? Why is, you know, this latest breakthrough in stem cell research important? You know, the reason it's important is because it serves humanity. It serves the planet. You know, it makes the world better. It makes life advance. And in a positive way, not in a way that, you know, that's bad for the planet, that's not sustainable, et cetera. So I think every discipline has an enormous role to play, provided they start with why and why for humanity. You know, if all disciplines said, let's place the end user or a human being at the center of everything we do, there is an inevitable convergence. It has to, because it converges on the human experience, right? It's when each domain starts to believe that it exists for another higher purpose that the fragmentation of the end result or the end purpose happens. And that's when we struggle to work with each other. But if we all universally agree this is about human beings and making our experience on this planet that much better, you know, pushing the boundaries of creation forward, that's a very, very powerful unifying message that can motivate all of us to a common end.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that's really important. And I think a lot of time we forget to take off our hat as, you know, whatever company you're working for, and just sit as a human being in a space and what conversations you're having. Because also we also talk about technology as being this like foreign thing, that it's not human. And Laura Filano, who I interviewed quite a while back now, she said something that really stuck with me, which is technology is fundamentally human creativity, right? Like that's where it comes
exactly
from.
What it is. Yeah. It's just the latest expression of our creative genius. Yeah.
So I think that's really important. I think once we can take off those, you know, work hats or job hats, or like I have to think like this because I work for a certain company or I come from a certain background, yeah, and sit at the table as humans, I think that integration piece will become much easier for sure. But I also agree that, yeah, it's not a one size fits all, and it's easier said than done. We can't solve all the world's problems in, you know, 30 minutes.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Cool. Well, let's talk about some emerging trends. I like to talk about ones that people aren't talking about. So do you have any ideas on that?
Actually, it's funny you say that. So I just saw last night that Mary Meeker's trends for the 2018 signals that she's processed has come out. I haven't actually read about it. To be honest, Zoe, I honestly don't know, right? I know where the hypes are. I know what everyone's talking about. I actually can't separate signal from noise in that sort of environment. So the short answer is I don't really know what I'd classify as a trend. I think the closest we'd come to it is that there seems to be a lot of interest in electric vehicles. There seems to be a lot of interest in smart cities, but nobody really knows what that means. And perhaps it's too abstract a concept and we need to break it down to individual verticals. There's a lot of hype around ICOs and cryptocurrency. And I deliberately use the word hype there and less of a trend. And I think artificial intelligence is at its most polarizing phase right now. So, you know, until we see how it ends up getting applied in a practical sense, I can't really comment on it. I mean, these are the buzzwords at the moment, and I'm sure I'm missing out a few. But I have no idea. I mean, in 20 years, if you look back, you know, 2040, and we're looking back, you know, and you and I have this conversation, there's probably a dozen things that are going to be part of our reality then that we didn't even know were coming, but we're actually active even today as of 2018, you know?
No, definitely. I think you answered the question anywhere, which is that there's so many things that, you know, people are talking about. It's hard to distinguish the hype between the hype and the fundamental kind of evidence-based or knowledge-based thought leadership, that kind of thing. So, and I think it's interesting just to keep having those conversations, even if it is just hype. I think it's interesting to see what other people think is interesting.
For sure.
Because I sometimes go, oh, I think that's interesting, but, you know, or I don't think that's interesting at all, but everyone else seems to think it's the most interesting thing. So I think even just that kind of what society's talking about, and it's what I find also is, you probably find the same, is when we're in the tech kind of world or when we're in, you know, the LinkedIn kind of world, we're talking to people that are interested in smart cities and all this stuff. So we're having all these conversations. But then when you go into the community, you're having completely different conversations. People are talking about different things.
Absolutely. We all get into our little echo chambers and bubbles, don't we?
And I think sometimes, like, when I delivered a presentation and I kind of was like, oh, does everyone just know this already? Like, and, you know, am I just boring people? But, you know, I got some really good feedback and, you know, they were like, oh, that was really informative, but, like, kind of, you know, we could see you have a lot of vision and all that kind of stuff. So I got really positive kind of, you know, feedback. But when I was kind of writing it, you're in your own bubble. You kind of go, oh, I know this stuff and I think this about this, but is this actually interesting?
Right.
To tell?
Yeah, no, it's very hard to tell. That's true.
So that's why I think it's really that collaboration integration piece is so important, so that you can bounce ideas off, you know, other people that are from different backgrounds and have different ideas and that kind of thing. So,
absolutely.
Yeah. And I think that's what we're doing a little bit with the Smart City Council Emerging Innovators. Like, there's people from so many different backgrounds there. We all have a common interest in the smart city space, but I think it's good just to bounce ideas off people that there's no bias, like, overall or anything like that.
Yeah, and I think also the conversation has been slightly, I don't want to say the word hijacked, even though that's the one that springs to mind, but it's not. But that's not accurate. The conversation has been skewed a lot towards being a technologist of technical. And, you know, I'm modestly technical myself, and I'm the first one to say, actually, it doesn't matter. You know, you can't over-depend or overemphasize one skill. Whatever skills you have can be pressed into service of a higher purpose if you're working towards the same purpose, which is why companies like Airbnb, for example, weren't created necessarily just by technologists. I mean, there are better designers that designed the experience so well that the trust factor was no longer an issue, you know, and they changed the world doing that. And I think that that's why, like you said, having these broader conversations that cross-pollinate across different disciplines and encourages people to get involved in solving hard problems rather than just saying, oh, you know, I don't know how to code, or, you know, I'm not a machine learning scientist, so I can't possibly contribute meaningfully. I think people should stop self-disqualifying because ultimately, as humans, we all share the same experiences, and therefore we're all pretty qualified to talk about what a good experience would be.
Yeah. If I rephrase my podcast manager, Ellen Ronalds-Keene, she always says, if you are enough, you don't actually need all this extra stuff. You are enough to come into this space. All you need is an interest and a passion, and then, you know, really amazing things can happen when you collaborate with other people that are really interested, motivated, and have passion as well.
Absolutely. 100% could not agree more.
Cool. Oh, well, this has been a great conversation. And I really only have one last question, which is, can people connect with you?
Look, I'm probably really, really the best on email. And also, you know, you can get me on Twitter at Zubin Pratap or at Wooshka Parking. And on email, it's zubin@wooshka.me. That's WHOOSHKA.ME. Those are the best ways to get in touch. And on LinkedIn. Oh, I'm really good at LinkedIn too.
LinkedIn, cool. Yeah, I'll put all those links into the show notes. So yeah, people will be able to connect with you and, yeah, have some really cool conversations.
I really look forward to it. And if there are people out there who have ideas but are holding themselves back, you know, I would love to speak to those people because they don't get a chance to express themselves. And I would rather listen to someone who's thinking about the problem than someone who's highly verbal about it but not really thinking about it.
Yeah, cool. Well, thanks so much for leaving us with that. And, yeah, I hope you have some really great conversations coming off this podcast.
And thanks, Zuri. I think what you're doing is fantastic. So, you know, I'm sure you have good days and bad days, but at the end of the day, everything you're doing is moving the state of the art forward. So keep going.
Thanks. Thanks a lot. Thanks for the encouragement. Appreciate it. Talk soon.
Cheers. Bye.
It's the Smart City Podcast. Whoa.
Thanks so much for listening to the Smart City Podcast. Show notes for this episode and all other episodes can be found at thesmartcitypodcast.com. If you have any questions or comments for me or any of my guests, connect with me via email, zoe@thesmartcitypodcast.com or via the socials. I'm on Twitter and Facebook at Smart City Pod. As always, I hope you enjoyed listening to this episode as much as I enjoyed making it.
Smart City Podcast is what you're looking for.